Thank you. Hi, my name is Marcel Kolaja. I'm the Policy and Advocacy Director for Europe at Access Now. We are going to be talking today about how is the European Commission planning to break cryptography this time, which is a bit provocative title, I understand, but also I think it kind of reflects the reality, unfortunately. Access Now is a civil society organization. Our mission is to defend and extend the digital rights of people and communities at risk, and I work in the Brussels office. So the crypto wars and attacks on encryption is something that's been here for decades. But I'll be speaking only about the recent events that I think we can date back to June 2023, when the European Commission set up a high-level group on access to data for effective law enforcement. The text in italic is a quote, and there will be a lot of quotes on these slides. So the group is tasked to explore any challenges that law enforcement in the Union face in their daily work in connection to access to data and explore and contribute to finding potential solutions to overcome them with the aim of ensuring the availability of law enforcement tools to fight crime and enhance public security in the digital age. Now, this is followed up in May 2024, where the high-level group adopts a set of recommendations that include establishing a research group to assess the technical feasibility of built-in lawful access obligations, including for accessing encrypted data for digital devices. So now you already recognize that things are getting very serious and dangerous. In June 2024, the Council of the European Union, which is a body where the ministers from the individual member states meet, they hold an exchange of views on these recommendations, and one of the priorities that the Home Affairs ministers identified is establishing legally and technically sound solutions for accessing encrypted electronic communication in individual cases and subject to a judicial order for the purpose of preventing, investigating, and prosecuting serious and organized crime and terrorism. What happens around the same time is the European elections. The Parliament is elected for 5 years, so 24 to 29, and subsequently, a couple months later, from the 1st of December, the von der Leyen Commission II starts. Now, with the political landscape shift, as you can see, you know, on the colors here, on the seats of the in the European Parliament. The colors are political groups, and the color that I believe is light blue, I'm colorblind, sorry for that, is the European People's Party, and what I believe is yellow is Renew Europe. So if you look at 2020, then you see that Renew Europe, which is the, you know, there are social liberals and neoliberals, basically the liberal political group, they are kind of in the center. Who is in the center is very often in negotiations the kingmaker. They decide where the needle moves because they are by definition in the center. Now, as you see from 2024, this has shifted so that the European People's Party is more in the center. So they are in a better position to basically find compromises left or right from them because these are the political groups that are closest to them. Well, the issue, of course, is that if on the right side from you, where you can find alternative majorities, there are only Eurosceptics, the far right, and the far, far right. The securitization narrative strengthens the political appetite for lawful access to encrypted data, even though I would argue it removes security by definition. And the securitization narrative is something that is very, very live in the current political landscape. So now, the European Commission starts a European internal security strategy called Protect EU. that is published by the European Union on the 1st of April 2025, unfortunately not as a joke, and that replaces the European Security Union strategy, which led to the chat control proposal, among others. So it's not a completely new thing, it's more of an evolution from the previous strategy that also led to some bad things. And this strategy sets out the objectives and actions for the next years to ensure a safer and more secure Europe. The Commission will present a technology roadmap on encryption to identify and assess technological solutions to be able to enable lawful access to encrypted data by law enforcement authorities in 2026. And this political narrative totally contrasts with the technical reality, and that the objective cannot be achieved without actually weakening encryption and therefore security. Roadmap for effective, what is it, 10 minutes? Roadmap for effective and lawful access to data for law enforcement. So this was published by the Commission back in June 25 as an important deliverable under the Protect EU strategy. It outlines six areas with key actions defined. Because we don't have too much time, I will not go through all of these, so maybe if you want to read this later, take a picture. We will focus on the fact that the Commission wants to, in that strategy and in that roadmap, wants to ensure that so-called evidence can be read, to quote this, which means they need to decrypt encrypted data in their understanding. So they want to deliver a technology roadmap on encryption in Q2 this year, and also a second very important action outlined is support the research and development of new decryption capabilities to equip Europol with next generation decryption capabilities from 2030. So when we speak about encryption and how would like the Commission like to access encrypted data, well, that technically speaking, we are about to see in Q2 2026 with this roadmap. However, at this moment, it is already clear that client-side scanning is something that the Commission has been exploring already for quite some time, including in the debates around chat control, and I see this as a change of strategy, that instead of attacking encryption directly, the narrative is that they will work around the encryption, and therefore the narrative, which is very false, is we are not weakening encryption. So client-side scanning is a technique that content is scanned before it is encrypted, which means on the client, and then, for instance, checking hashes of content against the database of prohibited material. Then this, of course, expands the attack surface. There are hard error rates, and of course, hash collisions is something that complicates everything. So this is an example from a research paper, Bugs in Our Pockets. This picture shows two pairs of hash collisions that actually exist. So basically, according to that software, this would be seen as the same picture. What is the potential impact? Weakening encryption is detrimental to fundamental rights enshrined in the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union, specifically protection of personal data and the freedom of expression and information. There is no technical lawful access to end-to-end encrypted communication without breaking privacy and security, period. Client-side scanning, therefore, breaks privacy and security. And my favorite parallel on what client-side scanning is like, imagine that that encryption is a seatbelt in a car that is protecting the passengers, and encryption is protecting the data. Now, client-side scanning means we are not directly weakening the seatbelt, but we just make you sit in front of the seatbelt, which means when there is a crash, the seatbelt is perfectly fine. Unfortunately, this may have a very disastrous impact on you. And with encryption and data, I see it as the very same. There is a risk of disproportionate surveillance and lack of judicial oversight. Companies can avoid Europe or implement weaker security, which would lead to innovation slowdown, which I find interesting enough given the Commission's agenda where Europe's competition, competitiveness is high on the agenda. And of course, as already outlined in the roadmap, research funding shift. So instead of strengthening security, I will water the plants, I promise, when I come home. Instead of funding, strengthening security, well, funding would shift to research on access to encrypted data. And of course, potential danger for free and open source software, because how do you implement client-side scanning in an open source project? Well, actually, you do, but then, by definition, anyone who finds a bug in that software can fix it and fork it. And I would say this client-side scanning is not only a bug, it's a security vulnerability that needs to be fixed ASAP. And then how do you deal with that? And more complications like this, of course, in the eyes of the politicians and lawmakers, can actually damage free and open source software. So let's frame the debate correctly. First, strong encryption is essential for security and protects national security. Second, given law enforcement exceptional access threatens human rights and democracy. Third, strong encryption strengthens privacy and security. And backdoors to encrypted systems will not stop criminals and terrorists from using strong encryption. If you all providers are forced to implement client-side scanning, for instance, or a system with any sort of backdoors into encrypted communication channels, then this does not mean that criminals and terrorists will use the same platforms. So basically that would mean the whole society would be under surveillance, just with the exception of those where the law enforcement wants to target. So what can be done? Definitely support civil society organizations, coalitions, and networks. Like, for instance, Access Now, where I work, a bunch of others that I have listed here. For the interest of time, I'm not going to read all of those. All of them, or most of them, have newsletters. They are active on social networks. Follow them. Of course, you can also donate. Most of those also receive individual donation. Donations, if you go on accessnow.org, there's a button to do it, so very easy. All these basically advocate for digital rights and defend the strong encryption and advocate against these efforts to undermine encryption. Of course, you can also talk to policymakers yourself. These organizations very often provide hints how to speak, who to speak to, and so on. You can also participate in public consultations if you want to spend a couple of evenings trying to figure out what the Commission tried to ask in a specific feedback request. And, of course, raise public awareness. Speak about this with your friends, with your colleagues in the community. And so on. Credits for the picture. I, by the way, really, really recommend this research paper, Bugs in Our Pockets. It's very well accessible. And that's it. I am afraid there is no time for questions.
Yeah, the panel has kindly donated some time for questions to you.
Okay.
So first of all, can we thank Marcel for his presentation?
Thanks.
Five minutes for probably two questions, and I'll let you pick them. Okay, so do you have a question for Marcel, please? We have a question.
Go ahead.
I'm going to do the first one I saw. If I can get there.
obviously, breaking or doing client-side scanning only works in centralized systems that can control the client. Now, if you have Mastodon or the Fediverse, federated communication, is this discussed at all, that we centralize or prefer regulate only centralized systems?
So, well, unfortunately, this would apply to everyone targeting the European market, right? This is how usually European regulation works. And I think it was also indicated in the previous talk, you know, that it's not only the applications themselves that can be targeted, it's also app stores, for instance, you know, that you can have an obligation potentially that it would say those clients that do not comply with these obligations, they cannot be on the app store. So there's a myriad of very bad proposals that can come up as part of this. And, you know, it does not mean that decentralized or federated systems would not fall into the scope. But what definitely applies is that there it's very difficult to have it on the control for niche communities or for criminals or terrorists that I have outlined. Because if you basically fix all these systems in the eyes of the politicians that the society uses, it doesn't mean that there will not be a terrorist organization who will fork one existing system and that they would actually escape these obligations. So I would say that effectively cannot work. It's a really, really bad proposal to go in the direction.
And there was another question down here, I think. Yes.
Thank you. Very quickly, so from a what can we do perspective, how much time do we have and what would you say are the most effective ways among the ones you have listed to help?
What was it, how much?
How much time do
time.
We have, yes, for intervention, so, and what's the most effective way?
What's the most effective approach?
Right. So I take it from the end. I wouldn't say that there's one silver bullet, you know, most effective approach. I think it's a combination and it's a puzzle that basically you have to build. So there are several elements you have to strategically use all of them. On the first part of the question, how much time we have, well, in Q2, which means very soon, in a couple of months, the Commission will come up with the technology roadmap. And then things can spin very quickly. At this moment, there is no legislative proposal when it comes to this on the table. Of course, there is the chat control, but that's, you know, separate from this very initiative. But this could potentially lead to a proposal of a very broad obligation to provide access to law enforcement if they need evidence for criminal investigation, which I would say chat control is nothing compared to this, you know, and that we will see after the technology roadmaps is here in Q2 2020 this year, Q2 this year. Yeah.
Thank you. We have time for one more question. And it's the back, of course.
Thank you. So, yeah, this makes a lot of sense, but from the point of view of law enforcement, how can we help them not implement this?
Good question. I tried to hint with the framing because I think it's a bad idea to, in like advocacy efforts, to go against this and dismiss basically the goal, because the objective is to protect the society. But I think we need to be hinting at the facts and framing the debate correctly, which is encryption is a key element in ensuring security of citizens. So basically going in this direction, you're undermining the main objective that this is, you know, trying to achieve. That's one thing. Second thing, where I think we can actually go against the arguments, is that the main argument is that law enforcement operates in dark because everything is encrypted. Well, this is of course not true. I believe that we actually live in a golden age of surveillance. Everyone is under surveillance. So saying we cannot actually catch criminals because we don't have access to end-to-end encrypted communication is just false. I mean, law enforcement needs to focus also on other angles. And third, law enforcement is not necessarily an answer to everything. Maybe prevention, maybe setting up a society that, you know, does not encourage so much, you know, into criminal activities, you know, living environment for people that would not feel incentivized or that, you know, would not be let down if they have mental health issues and so on. Like, there's a myriad of other elements that you need to also take into scope and not just look into, we need to access encrypted data.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks.